checking in on Finance. Willing the good of a nettle.
Yeah, January. We have President Trump in Davos. We've got Bitcoin. We've got people not allowed to say literally. And we've got buybacks. Welcome to Chuckin' Ann on Finance, brought to you by IIE Financial. IIE Financial, willing the good of another. Visit the offices today, IIEfinancial.com, or call the offices 832-953-4998. That's 832-953-4998. I am your host, Chuck Fulkerson, joined by the illustrious Annie Fulkerson. Good to see you,
so
as
excited
always.
Excited to be here. Lots to talk about this week.
Yeah, it was a good week. You know, we always kind of kick off and talk about the markets, and we are living in the beautiful town of Houston, Texas, right? So Houston is, as I'm looking out the window, it's one of those days where it's kind of like a bag of Oreo cookies. Like there's light, and then it's dark, and then there's light, and then it's dark, because the sun comes out, the skies are gone, the gray comes, the sun comes, it can't figure it out. It's like, wasn't there a movie, Sybil, right? Or that, no, there was a movie that came out recently where a guy had like 20 different personalities. That's what our weather's been this month.
This whole year since the hurricane.
Yeah.
Really?
Like you got some days where it's 85 degrees and you are in shorts, and then 2 days later it snowed.
It's snowing.
It literally snowed 3 days after being 85 degrees.
Mm-hmm. And it lasted. It stuck. We had snow on our roof.
Stuck for
4 days.
Stuck for 3 days. So, mm-hmm. You know, big week in the sports world as well, as we're heading into nearly Super Bowl week. This week is Pro Bowl weekend for those of you that watch the NFL, and the Pro Bowl I tend to find is a completely irrelevant game. But today your sister said, isn't the Super Bowl this week? Isn't Tiger Woods playing against the Yankees?
The Boston Yankees.
Yeah, isn't Tiger Woods playing against the Boston Yankees? And I will tell you, anytime it's a Patriots Super Bowl, that's kind of how I feel. Sorry, New England.
Yeah.
It's just, as a guy who's born and bred, who's a Steeler fan, it's hard seeing the Patriots in yet another Super Bowl.
But I don't know. I'm glad you keep me up to date on things, because since we had kids and now I'm with homeschooling and running two businesses.
Oh, no chance.
There's like, no, the last time I sat down and watched a full football game, I think was maybe 6 years ago.
Yeah, well, and at this point, I don't think I've had a chance to watch really very many even this whole year. I only watch one or two. So I will tell you, probably not going to watch Super Bowl either. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so talking about the markets as we talk about every week, we ended the week at just another all-time high. We got to a high of 2876 in the S&P, closed a little bit off of that all-time high at 2874 and three quarters. So the S&P continues to march up. It continues to march up. There continues to be nothing but strong bullish sentiment. And I looked a little bit earlier today, and I was doing a little bit of research a bit earlier today. And in that research, I found that the S&P for the last 4 weeks has closed just about on its high. So if I look at a chart of the S&P over the past 4 weeks, it's closed every week just about right on its high. And that high that it closes on, that's almost unheard of for the S&P to close on weekly highs for four consecutive weeks. Now, what that means to the average investor is that every week they're going home happy, right? Every week they're going home happy. But, you know, it's there was a lot of stuff that went on over the weekend, right? There was, really over the weekend, the World Economic Summit, and President Trump spoke at the World Economic Summit.
Which was a big deal.
It was a big deal. It was a big deal. And so as we kind of continue to march higher, I heard somebody today or a couple of days ago, I think I was watching CNBC, kind of flipping through the channels, and one of the things that she said is that as this market goes higher, there's more and more people that are still just sitting in cash. They're just sitting in cash because they're waiting for that other shoe to drop. But they've been waiting for that other shoe to drop for 4 years now.
Well, you even got a call from an advisor who shorted the market back in October.
Yeah.
For his clients.
Yeah.
I would not want to be one of his clients.
No. And I've had that. You know, that's one of the scary parts about when we look at what the market can do. The market can stay irrational longer than you can stay solvent.
Hmm.
And sure, it's absolutely irrational. And the fact that we've closed on the high for four consecutive weeks, if not on the high, just slightly off of it, right? There's been no profit taking on a Friday. that's almost unheard of. Yeah. To have no profit taking on a Friday, you'd think that sometimes people would not want to go home with it. So, reading a couple of pieces about, you know, what does a strong January look like, right? So the Dow is up 7% so far for this year, which at this moment would be the sixth best January in the last 68 years. That's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Up 7% in the Dow so far this year. And interestingly enough is that in the past years where there's been a 5% plus gain in January, we saw an average return of 22.2% for the full year. So, what's your thoughts on the continuation of that? Right? What's your thoughts on the continuation of this meteoric rise?
Well, we talk so many times about how, you know, we can look at the overvaluation, you know, of the market, and, you know, and you've done articles on the melt up, you
right.
know, and what a bubble looks like. We can look at all of the statistics about the, you know, Januarys have been positive 65% of the time. If they're positive, there's this likelihood that the market will be, you know, positive for the rest of the year because it will drive fundamentals. Theoretically, it will drive
sure.
fundamentals. And then, you know, we can be relatively confident that we could have a good rest of the year. By that same token, I think that, you know, while all of those statistics might be helpful and entertaining to look at, I think the thing that to look at overall is to not fight the market.
Right.
You know, us as individual investors with, you know, we have clients from anywhere from a couple tens of thousands of dollars to millions of dollars, right? We're not moving the market.
No.
We need to participate in the market, have a plan for what the market is telling us, capitalize when we can, and protect what we have when the market starts to, you know, pull back based on quantitative levels. So that's kind of what, you know, what I feel for, what I feel
when,
about
when
that.
When you say that, it reminds me of a friend. I used to have a friend named Rudy, and he was Russian, right? And so when you said that, it reminded me of something he used to tell people all the time. He would say, "You don't have your own opinion. No having your own opinion in the markets. The markets tell you what to do. Don't have your own opinion." And that's it, right?
Yeah.
You shouldn't have your own. You shouldn't decide what you think the market's going to do.
Mm-hmm. Or what you think the market should be doing.
Definitely not what it
should
be doing.
I think there's a lot, you know, we've heard from several investors that are just totally baffled by the fact that the market, quote unquote, should not be this high.
Yeah.
And they're reacting and trading as if the market should not be this high. And they're missing out. First of all, if they're short, they're losing a tremendous amount of
right.
money because the market is going straight up.
And even if you're in cash, you're missing the lost opportunity is humongous. But combine that lost opportunity with the inflationary factors that we will have.
Yeah.
Right? So being in cash is a negative position.
Mm-hmm.
It is. There's no question about it. There's a negative connotation around.
Because our biggest asset is time, and you can't get that back.
You can't get it back, and you're also losing the value of the purchasing power of your currency.
Right.
Right. The U.S. dollar is continuing to fall, and that was one of the things that, you know, President Trump, when he was in Davos over the World Economic Summit, he spoke a pretty strong message. I mean, it felt like a pretty strong message that he talked about specifically around. You know, his job is to put America first, but it doesn't mean America. I kind of liked the quote, and you know, we try to stay as clearly away from politics as we can. But it was at an economic summit, right? So, but he said America first doesn't mean America alone,
mm-hmm.
and I liked that, right? He basically was out there doing an advertisement saying, "Bring the American companies, come to America, come do business here," and we've already seen some impacts of that with the tax cut. The tax cut has already shown us some of the impacts of what's happened in regards to, you know, one of the things that President Trump talked about in his speech was was that there are companies that immediately started giving back money, right? $1,000 to employees or $2,000. And I think I saw the other day, I forget who it was, somebody gave back $3,000 to some of their employees.
Mm-hmm.
But then right on the other heels of that is what happened with Lowe's, right? And Lowe's came out with a story that they're doing a stock buyback. So the proponents of the tax plan are saying, listen, this allows the companies to give more to their workers. It allows the companies to invest more in infrastructure. It allows these companies to invest more in growth and jobs. The opponents say, yeah, but then they're just going to buy back their own stock and artificially inflate the market. So when we look at that, here's what I tell everybody. You're sitting at home. You've got your Samsung monitor. You've got your LG monitor. You've got your Dell laptop, your HP laptop, whatever in the world you're looking at. What can you do about that? Nothing. You can't do anything about that. But you can have a plan to react to what the market does based on all of it.
Well, but if they're buying back their stock and the stock is going up, we can participate in that upward movement anyway,
sure,
though, can't we?
Sure. And that's my point, is that we can't control what these companies do.
But we can participate in it.
We can participate. See, and I think the mistake a lot of people have is that they think that we are going to get control of the market, right? That they're going to be able to control it, or they're going to be able to outthink it. Don't outthink it. Don't outcontrol it. You can't... I forget where I said this. You can't punch where I heard this, but I heard a phrase one time. You can't punch a wave. You can't punch a wave. It's not going to do any good. You've got to let it wash over you and go with it. Well, the market's kind of doing that same thing. And what happens is some people are out there right now trying to punch the wave, and they're just going to get hurt. So let's turn our attention a little bit to some of the news that moves the markets. We always like to take a little bit of the news headlines, rip the news from the headlines. That sounds so tough when I say...
It sounds so painful.
Well, we rip the news. We don't just like touch the news. We rip the news from the headlines.
I don't know if I like... It sounds painful.
I don't know, but I've heard people say it and it sounds cool.
It does sound cool, but I don't like it.
You know what? As a kid, what's funny
is I need a different verb.
Well, you always need a different verb. You're like a grammar pundit of all time. Like if there were grammar pundits, it would be you. I think we should get you a professional grammar pundit t-shirt.
I do have the mug that
you have
says
a mug.
That my sister got me that
yeah.
says, I'm silently correcting
she
your grammar.
She has a mug that says, I'm silently correcting your grammar.
Mm-hmm. And I have to do that a lot with you.
Try living with that. I'm just saying. Try living with that.
That's what 12 years of Catholic school, Catholic grammar school in high school will do for
yeah,
you.
But see, the problem is that you can't even say you went to Catholic grammar school and got wrapped on the knuckles. Like a lot of people went to Catholic school and they got wrapped on the knuckles.
You were a princess. No, I think somehow that like people think they sound cool when they talk about like mean nuns. I had fantastic religious sisters that taught me in school. They never hit me.
Well, maybe that's because you didn't deserve to be hit.
No, they didn't hit anybody. And we had some pretty interesting characters growing up in school. Yeah.
Pretty squirrely characters?
Yeah.
In your North Jersey place?
Did they talk back? They talk back. Yeah,
they were talking back? Oh, I love making fun of New Jersey.
I had great, great nuns who were teachers growing up.
Well, so they taught you good grammar, right? They taught you the proper use of words.
They did.
Well, that leads us into today's news of the weird, 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 weird. Our news of the weird, right? Our news headlines, because we always like to start with our news of the weird. And our news of the weird actually comes from your part of the world. I say your part of the world, but you know, you're from Jersey and born and bred, and this one comes from New York City's East Village. There is a dive bar in the East Village. That it's called Continental. They're getting a plug, but they've already gotten a couple plugs out of this. And the Continental has this dive bar in East Village has a large sign outside, and it says, I'm going to read it to you. It says, sorry, but if you say the word literally inside Continental, you have 5 minutes to finish your drink and then you must leave. If you actually start a sentence with, I literally, you must leave immediately. This is the most overused, annoying word in the English language, and we will not tolerate it. So, my question is this. Will they literally throw you out, or will they figuratively throw you out?
No, they will literally throw you out.
So, in the air, like throw. No. That is not literally throwing you out. Making you leave is not literally throwing you out.
Yeah.
Making you leave is figuratively throwing you out.
True.
So I did,
and there's no caveat in that article that says that if you do use the word literally correctly,
what if I use it properly?
I think they still throw you out.
I see. That's ridiculous.
And that, and we were talking about that with my family yesterday. They just dad would not.
And once again, I'm okay with the word figuratively. As long as they can figuratively throw me out, I'm good with that.
Yeah.
But they can't literally throw, because if they literally throw you out, that would mean that your feet would have to leave
assault.
The ground. That is assault. That is assault. That is assault. So, this is what they consider.
I could literally sue them.
You could literally sue them. See?
For a broken arm.
Hashtag literally lawyered. No, that's, but this is a, you know, what do you think the most over word used? The worst word in the English language, the word you hate to hear. Like you hear it and you just go, what is it? You've got one. I know you do. What is it?
I think firestorm.
Firestorm. It's been up. When there's a firestorm of controversy.
Or in everyone is outraged.
Yeah. Outrage. Outrage and firestorm are two of the most annoying. Mm-hmm. Do you know what mine is?
What is it?
When we watch things like the DIY Network or HGTV, everything is a warm and inviting space.
Space.
It's a warm and inviting space. They can't just say, oh, this is a nice room. No. It's got to be a nice warm space.
Yeah.
Why does it have to be a nice warm space? Why can't it just be a nice warm room? Right?
Because we have to sound special.
Ugh. I don't know. So that's our news news headline, our news of the weird, if you will, is that you can
Was not literally ripped from the headlines.
Oh, come on. Now you're just nitpicking. Craziness. See what I have to deal with? You guys try to live with that. Okay. So there's another article back to kind of more of the topic at hand from MarketWatch. And this was from MarketWatch.com. And we do get a lot of stuff from MarketWatch.com. But it says, invest in 5 mega trends that can pay off without a bull market in stocks. And the point is, it says, what if we don't have a bull market in stocks? There are some mega trends out there that are so big that you don't need a bull market in stocks for this to continue. And the one that they have are industrial automation.
Automation?
That's literally the wrong way to say it.
Motion.
Automation. Industrial automation. An aging society. Self-driving cars. Infrastructure. And this is the one I find most interesting. Water. These are the 5 mega trends that can pay off without a bull market in stocks. And now, why is that? Well, let's start with the first one, industrial automation. So industrial automation talks primarily about companies that are basically just replacing human beings in industry. And that as the market, if the bull market doesn't continue and you start to look for where might there be some opportunity, you might find it there simply because companies will be looking to reduce costs, which means more people will be laid off.
Automation is everywhere.
Right.
You know, we see it in fast food chains where people taking orders and even the people making the actual products are being replaced by robots. Even servers are being replaced there were some Japanese concepts that
completely waiters, waitresses.
Waiters and waitresses delivering food to the table where everything was done by some sort of robot. And we're even seeing how...
And it was in Japan, so it wasn't just any robot. It was Domi Yamagato Disco Roboto. You're welcome. You're welcome.
Anyway, I think, too, we're seeing homes being automated, right?
Yeah.
You know, look at how many times, like in the morning, we say, you know, hey, Alexa, give me my morning briefing.
Sure.
Right? Just for a headline and your headlines or what's going on. I ask her every morning what the weather is.
Well, I listen to a really good podcast. A podcast that I really like is Wall Street Unplugged. And it's an analyst, Frank Curzio, good guy. And he talked about at the CES, everything was smart homes. Mm-hmm. He said that smart homes stuck out like a sore thumb, and there were really good opportunities in that industry, in that sector. And he felt like that was really what he took out of CES. And that's now what's interesting is that smart home thing also leads to number 2, which is another mega trend to watch for, is an aging society. So an aging society is not just healthcare. When you think aging society, most people immediately think drugs and healthcare. But it's also the things that allow people to live in their homes longer. Like being able to control everything without ever having to get out of your chair. Right? I mean, it's
so we become like Wall-E.
Yes, like the movie Wall-E. And I will tell you, I sometimes feel like that guy. I feel like that guy. Like the guy's in the chair. I could be that dude. Another one is self-driving cars. Now, I will tell you, the self-driving car one, while in my brain it seems to make sense, and while in my brain and in my logical mind, self-driving cars, absolutely, no doubt, lots of upside potential, lots of room to go. There's a lot of cars in the world that you'd have to replace to get there, right? I mean, to have fleets of self-driving cars on the road, I think self-driving cars, while I think there's opportunities for them, while I think that there's an endless upside, I think it'll take decades for that to take full adoption.
It might, but at the same time, look at when oil was at, you know, $5 or gas was at $5 a gallon.
Right.
And people pretty quickly started making very different choices in their vehicle purchases. And so there was a significant increase in, you know, smaller cars, electric cars, you know, that car companies were pumping out pretty quickly. So I think that if consumer demand is strong enough, companies will figure out how to pump out those fleets.
Right. That's a good point. They will want to be able to figure out, how do I pump out all these? Because you got to think that an auto drive car, a self-drive car, is going to be more efficient in its driving habits, mm-hmm. to reduce consumption. And also the safety is there. But I think the perception of safety is not there. Mm-hmm. So one car gets into an accident in a self-drive mode. I remember that a Tesla that was in autopilot, which is the Tesla mode, got into an accident and people freaked out, had a really hard time with it. They didn't like it. They said, can't do self-driving cars. But that was one accident, when there were literally hundreds more that day, right? Driven by people that were on their cell phone. Or mm-hmm. were tired, or had done drugs that morning, or had slept in and were rushing to get to work, or whatever it happened to be, mm-hmm. right? And so, just something to consider, these mega trends. Another mega trend, and this is probably the one that I like the most. The mega trend of water is an increased interest to a lot of people. As we start to see more and more water shortages, literally around the world.
Literally?
Literally, figuratively. Darn.
no, it's actually literally.
Many elements of America's water infrastructure are aged, beyond repair, and they're not where they need to be. And they just need to be completely replaced. And some cash-strapped municipalities, they don't have the money to do it. But there are publicly traded American water companies that could do that. They're for-profit companies that operate much like publicly traded electric utilities, but they've got a lot more growth potential. So this is actually the one that I find to be the most interesting, and one that people should probably pay the most attention to going forward. So we have to talk a little bit about what is traditionally one of, if not the biggest, weeks of the year. Did you know that? We're coming up on one of them.
Earnings.
I was going to say the Super Bowl.
Oh, sorry.
Really? You went right in. You went right for it. I was going to talk about how we're so excited to see the Patriots in the Super Bowl again. No, I'm not. I'm not really not excited about that. No, you're right. It's earnings. This is...
That's how our brains work. I mean, it's... We're always thinking about it.
You're so. Always on task. You're always like, I'm on task. And I'm like, where's the cake? You got cake?
We got cake.
We do have cake.
We do have cake.
It was your mom's birthday, and your sister made a cake. Your sister made a cake that looked literally like a pot of macaroni,
uh-huh.
boiling over with meatballs and on sauce.
The
top.
The cake was incredible.
We got to put a picture of that.
We'll put that as our show picture.
We'll put that as
and
a
we'll
show
put it
picture.
On Twitter as
That's
well.
Got to be a show picture, mm-hmm. because that cake that she made was amazing. She's like, oh, this is just fun for me. I told her she needs to start her own company. Just doing cakes.
That's right.
It was astounding. Mm-hmm. But anyway, because I'm always looking for cake. But anyway, we talk about this as one of the most powerful weeks of the year. And Market Watch comes out and says, stock market steams ahead as big tech earnings and Fed come into view. And the first paragraph, it says, the stock market is heading into its most exciting and potentially most volatile week of the new year as earnings season picks up the pace and the Federal Reserve convenes its first meeting of 2018.
Which I find slightly humorous that it says that it's potentially the most volatile, because it's been so calm and
we've
tranquil.
Had no volatility. It's just been straight up.
Yeah, that
it's like a Paula Abdul song.
It's almost like
straight
when,
up. Now tell me, do you really want to love me forever?
Oh.
That just happened. That just happened.
It reminds me of like we have a cat. When the cat's sleeping, like picks up its head and then lays back down. Like
that's activity. That's activity.
That would be volatility in the market right now.
It's
the
just
cat picking up her head.
Right. I mean, and what's funny is like I meet with people and I talk to clients and I try to talk to them about what are their goals and what do they want to be, and they say, well, am I going to beat the market? And my answer is the same all the time. No. If you want to beat the market, just invest in the market. Don't try to outthink the market, because one of the great things about the way the U.S. markets are structured is that if you invest in the index itself, when a stock is doing bad, we've said this before on the show, when a stock is doing bad, they kick it out of the index. So why try to outsmart the index? Just invest in the index. If you want to perform, the problem with just investing in the index is if you want to get exactly the results of the market, then great. When it goes up 10%, you'll get 10. When it goes up 12, you get 12. When it goes down 50, you'll lose 50. There's the rub. Because the psychological aspect of losing 50% hurts more than making 100% feels good. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, where the rub lies. Because what happens is you lose, people think back to the pain of 2000, the pain of 2008, and there's that 50% market correction. That still stings more than the last 2 years, where we've gone up probably 60% in the last 2 years combined. People don't remember the feel good, they remember the pain. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when we look at the market's volatility, and I'm kind of going off on a tangent here a little bit, this volatility, this, or should I say lack of volatility we've had since the calendar turned over to 2018, I think could be lulling people into a sense of false sense of security. False sense of security, making them feel a little bit more comfortable than maybe they probably should be.
Mm. Well, and that being said, you know, we beat the drum all the time, you know, about having a plan. So, you know, coming up into this next earnings season, you know, we've got earnings coming out from, you know, the big guys everybody knows, the Facebooks, the Googles, the Apples, the Microsofts, the Amazons, you know, which are all up. And
well,
in Trump and his
125 S&P companies announced next week.
Right. Including 10 of the Dow. And what I think is interesting, President Trump, see if I can find the quote real quick. President Trump in his speech on at Davos was talking about Apple specifically. And he said that Apple will be bringing back the world's largest company. Apple announced its plans to bring $245 billion with a B in overseas profits home to America. That their total investment into the United States economy will be more than $350 billion over the next 5 years.
So let's talk about why they're bringing that back, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is where, to really understand fiscal monetary policy, makes you go, oh, that's what's happening. So if we think about what's happened to our dollar, right? The value of the U.S. dollar over the past few months has gone down, right?
Mm-hmm.
Strong move down. The value of the U.S. dollar has gone down, which means if you have euros or yen or pounds with your euro or pen or your euros, your yens, your pounds, you can buy more
dollars.
So if Apple is bringing back $540 billion or whatever the number, whatever the number is,
mm-hmm,
when the dollar was worth more, they would have brought back less. See, because the reason they're bringing back so much more now is because the dollar has lost in value. Now, let's couple that with a nice tax break.
Right. Tax breaks went from, what, 35% down to 21.
Mm-hmm. In that range. And so what you now have is you've got this perfect windstorm, or what was it, windfall?
Yeah.
I don't know. Perfect storm and a windfall.
Yeah. Right? I think we're so mixing analogies.
That's how I roll. But anyway, you got this perfect windstorm of a combination of better tax consequences and the weaker dollar. The weaker dollar means that when they bring their euros back and they repatriate those funds, yeah, I couldn't remember windstorm, but I said repatriate. But anyway, when they repatriate those funds back into U.S. dollars, they're getting more dollars for their money that they're repatriating, mm-hmm. which increases companies' performance on their earnings balance sheet. So that's why I anticipate a strong earnings season. I really do. It's the third quarter where the chickens come home to roost. See, the problem is, and here's what, you know, we have a problem, I think, sometimes in our economy, and this isn't just in our economy, this is in our government as well, and this is in our retirement, and this is in it's just in life. It's called kicking the can down the road, right? And when companies are repatriating their money back to the U.S. economy in dollars that are worth less, they're getting more dollars, so their profits will show higher. But the inflation will catch up to it. And so all of a sudden, now you're going to wind up with higher commodity costs and higher cost of doing business, which will then in the third quarter do what to their profits? It will drop them. See, the chicken's got to come home to roost. And eventually, you can't just keep kicking the can down the road, changing and making things better. And it typically takes about two quarters after that money's repatriated to kind of come back into the fold and into the cycle of what they're going to use that money for. And we're going to see higher commodity costs. And what's our first higher commodity cost? Oil.
Which is actually a very interesting time period, because after this first quarter earnings, 6 months down the road, you're looking at right around election season.
Right. So right? Midterm elections are going to be a big deal.
Right. So we have many congressional seats that are going to be vacant, one of which is in our very own district. Our congressman is retiring, and there are 11 people on the ballot. There's 7 Republicans and 4 Democrats. And we actually are going to be interviewing some of them on the show in the next couple of weeks.
And full disclosure, we invited every one of them to be interviewed.
Exactly. Yeah.
Everyone.
All 11.
We invited all 11 and said, come on down. So you'll get to hear what are their thoughts around the fiscal responsibility and mm-hmm. what they can do. And we're going to ask them, you know, we're going to ask them questions, I think, that you guys want to hear. So if you've got questions you want to hear, tweet them to us.
Right.
Go to @IIEFinancial on Twitter and tweet us the questions that you want us to ask these congressional candidates. I'd love to hear what you guys have to say.
Yeah.
Because I think that as we look at, because the policies, if you will, the fiscal monetary policy of lowering the value, which is also, you know, the interest rates rising, dollars lowering in value, it's great for profits today.
It's also great for exports as well.
And it's designed to stimulate exports. But we're never going to get our wages lower than a lot of these countries that we're competing with in the export world. Right. No matter what we can export all we want, but getting it down there is going to be tough. You know, and right now, I saw an interview earlier today with somebody from JP Morgan, and they said, so what sectors are you bullish on? And her exact words were all of them. That's it. She just said, we're bullish on all of them. There's no reason not to be bullish on any sectors in this market. Well, I could be bullish on all the sectors, but like I said earlier, at some point, the chickens have to come home to roost. And if you don't have a plan for when they do, you're going to be in trouble, right? And that plan isn't just going to be around your investments. It's not just going to be around your retirement. It's also going to be around things like insurance. And what that does in your total financial picture is also very important. 2-1. We should talk about one of those things that nobody wants to talk about. What are those things that nobody wants to talk about?
Pinworms.
Pinworms. That's definitely one nobody wants to talk about. Right? Nobody wants to talk about that. Nobody wants to talk about lice, if they get head lice.
Athlete's foot.
Athlete's foot. That's a good one. But nobody seems to ever want to talk about insurance. But you got to. Right? It's so funny because at one point in my life, I was talking to my mom about insurance. And my mom said, don't tell me about no life insurance. I'm like, why not, Mom? She's like, because then if my life insurance is good, your dad might kill me. See, I'm a big believer in this when it comes to insurance, is that as long as my EP is greater than my EV, then excuse me, as long as my EP is greater than my IV, then I'll be okay. Do you know what my EP is?
Your earning potential.
You know what my IV is? Insurance value.
Oh.
As long as my earnings potential still exceeds my earnings value, I'll be okay. Once my earnings potential is below my insurance value, I'm not eating anything.
I'm pushing you out onto the ice.
You're pushing me out on the ice. I ain't eating anything that you make for me. Nothing. Because that's where it gets dangerous. No, but I mean, I think that insurance is one of those things that people don't spend enough time thinking about or planning for in their retirement plans, especially when we're young,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's a couple of schools of thought around insurance, and there's a couple of things to know about insurance that I think are worth at least addressing here. First of all, the two traditional and most standard insurance policies. The first is called a whole life policy. The second is called a term policy. A good way to think about it is the difference between renting and buying a house, right? When you rent an apartment, every time you pay rent, what do you earn out of that?
The right to live there.
The right to live there for that period of...
of time.
Time. But at the end of that rent, when your lease is up, what do you have?
Well, you have the option to sign on again, and the landlord has the option to either keep your rent the same or raise your rent.
Right. And physically, you own nothing.
Right.
So when the lease is up, you get nothing, and you can re-sign, but you're going to wind up probably paying more, right? Because things have gone up. That's term insurance in a nutshell, right?
Mm-hmm. So and term it's typically insurance, for younger people with children.
Yeah.
You know,
it has its place. Don't get me wrong. We have term insurance, right? Mm-hmm. We bought 20-year term policies when our children were just before they were born, just to make sure that if something happened to us, they'd be okay. But that's why we got 20-year term policies, right? To make sure that they'd make it into college land, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think term has its place and term is useful, and you can buy 1-year term and 5-year term and 20-year term. And
very appropriate for young people starting out, healthy young people, and especially young families. That's traditionally the people that it's best for.
It is, but there's the concept of whole life insurance. Now, whole life insurance is insurance that you pay your entire life, right? Up until age 100. Technically, it's up until age 100. And you pay essentially a steady premium. Now, you can get what are called paid up policies that maybe you pay a higher premium and you're done paying in 20 years, or you're done paying in 30 years, or you're done paying in 5 years. And you pay a higher policy, a higher premium. But for these whole life policies, some of the advantages are is that you've got a guaranteed cash value that grows in the policy. And that cash value, a lot of times you'll hear people talk about is that is an investment vehicle, and that you can utilize that cash value as an investment vehicle. And as that continues to grow, that's a good way to save some money. Yeah, I can see the value in that for some. I actually kind of like the universal policy a bit better myself. And a universal policy is kind of a blend of the two. It's got some of the benefits of whole life, but it's also got a lower premium.
Well, they have flexible premiums.
And flexible premiums, yeah. So there's a tremendous amount of variability and options you can have. But here's one of the things I will say. The option to not have any doesn't exist. You need life insurance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, last time I checked, we're all going to use it someday.
That's right. Funeral parlors will never go out of business.
Right. I mean, there's a few things in life that are always going to happen. Death, taxes, and Tom Brady. But anyway, no, it's one of these things where you've got to have the right type of coverage for your family that makes the most sense. So talk about a couple of different situations, right? And we've got clients that have anywhere from, we've got clients that are in their 20s with young children to clients in their 60s with grown children and grandchildren. And we've got everywhere in between.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, let's take somebody like us as a good example, right? I'm pushing 28. I mean, 40, but it'd be nice to say I was 28 still. When I was 28, I could eat anything. But anyway, pushing 40 years old, got two young children, right? 3, 6, young kids. And if I were to go today and get a whole life policy, it'd be less expensive for me to get it now before I'm not quite 40 yet. I turn 40 later this year. It'd be a little less expensive to get it now than it would 3 years from now or 4 years from now or 10 years from now, mm-hmm. right? Because as you get older, the probability of dying gets higher. The probability of dying is 100% at some point, right? So the good thing about whole life is, I believe at some point, it's time to start to transition out of term and into whole, right? And where that point is for you and for anybody, I don't really know. But I think that it's a valid point and something that everybody should at least look at and have in their hip pocket. And part of it is because it's a way to create an estate, if you will, and to set up your heirs for success, right? A wise man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. And it, you know, which means that your parents are going to leave everything to the grandkids.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's you're right. It's different for every single person, and that's why understanding the whole picture of a person's life and children and whether they are business owners or
the totality of their history.
The totality of their history.
I love you. Right. See, I just came out with that kind of a word. I just dropped it.
I do think that's important because the cookie cutter approach is, could make some people insurance poor,
Right. And I've known people that are cash rich, are insurance poor and cash rich. No.
No. Insurance rich and cash poor.
That's what I meant to say. Yeah. Because they've got all this insurance because the problem is that they've met with advisors. They get, just for the record, most advisors get paid a lot more money on insurance policies than they do on investment advice. There's just no getting around that. Now, with the fiduciary rules, some advisors are required to really make sure that they're putting their clients' interests first. And I'm not saying that insurance is bad, but if you've got an advisor who automatically is recommending insurance and annuities before anything else, it's time to kind of perk your ears up a little bit and wonder why, especially in a situation where we've got, like we've talked about on the show, straight up market conditions where you've got a plethora of investment opportunities out there.
Are low fee options.
That are very low fee options. And what you don't want to do is tie up all your money in too much insurance product where you miss out on too much opportunity elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so, one of the things that you can do is look at kind of a hybrid. And the universal policies can give you that hybrid. And a universal insurance policy will give you the ability to have an investment component and a life insurance policy. Now, you can't overfund those, meaning you can't put more into the investment side than you have in the life insurance side, because then it can turn into what's called a modified endowment contract. Which is really not good. There are certain life insurance policies that have investments tied to them. And if you have the right type of investments in your portfolio inside of that universal policy, then it might make sense to kind of blend the two together. And that's really what I like for somebody in like my boat, right? Somebody that's in their in there between the ages of 35 and 55, and they're looking for still investment gain, but they still need the security and the safety that life insurance would provide, maybe that's something to consider and something for people to look at.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you've never looked at that or you've never planned on that, at least just start, you could start small, start with a Google search, right? Or you could, oh, I don't know, call us and see what we could do, see if we can help answer any questions and see if there's anything that we can kind of do for you. Because I don't want people to think that I'm anti-life insurance. I'm certainly not. I think everybody should have it. I just think you got to have the right one that fits your particular need and your life every single day.
Yeah, and of course we, you know, the education is super important. And so, you know, we know that we're not the right fit for everybody, but we can provide the education for people to be able to make an informed decision.
And just point them in the right way.
Right.
And as long as you're pointing the right way, then
that's the most important thing.
And that's really what matters. So how about earlier today, driving around town and finding out the gas was $1.95 a gallon.
It's back down again.
It's one of those things where you just go, what the? Right? What the?
Like our nephew.
Yeah. It's what the? Yeah. Gas was $1.95 a gallon. But interestingly enough, even though gas is $1.95 a gallon, crude oil is continuing its march higher. Crude oil as of, ended the week at $66.24 a barrel. Continued to march higher. Last week had a slightly down week, but, this week continued its march higher and is set to open higher when the futures open on Sunday evening. So, you know, crude oil is continuing to march higher. I feel like there's really not a whole lot of stop in crude oil until $80 a barrel. I believe that $80 a barrel is our next real kind of resistance point in crude oil, and that's having a pretty profound impact on jobs, especially here in the Houston area. Lots more companies in the Houston area are opening up, and there's a lot more. And there was an article in investing.com, and I think you read the article as well, and it talks about resurgent U.S. oil industry priming the economic pump.
Mm-hmm.
And that economic pump, as a general rule, is crude oil went from $110 a barrel in the summer of 2014 to about $30 a barrel in January 2016. And that drop in oil prices corresponded with a rise in the value of the dollar. So we're not only seeing oil prices go up, but part of the reason I think that we're seeing oil prices go up is because we're seeing the dollar go down. And that dropping of the dollar is going to help a lot with the overall move in oil.
And I think that has a lot to do also with inventory levels, right? Inventory levels have been fluctuating, whether, you know, it's how much we're pulling out of the ground domestically or how much we're trying to figure out how much we're going to import from, you know, other nations. And the thing that, you know, there's an article on Bloomberg, that I was reading, and I guess in listening to the talks at Davos and the OPEC meetings and stuff, it doesn't seem like they know exactly how much what that inventory number is.
Right.
We just know that we haven't gotten there yet.
Sure.
Right. And so that's, I think, another thing that's, you know, the element of uncertainty in the price of oil, you know, that's contributing to that, you know, to that rise in the price.
Well, and here's what I find kind of most interesting, because there's a juxtaposition right now between what's happening in the stock market and what's happening in the oil markets. And let me explain what I mean. So volume is the measurement of number of shares traded. So in the stock market, if you pull up a monthly chart of the stock market, meaning you look at, let's just say Apple. Let's say you're looking at a monthly chart of Apple, and you're looking at the price of Apple. And underneath the price, you look at the volume of Apple, meaning the number of shares traded. What you'll see is that Apple is continuing to march higher and higher and higher and higher and higher in price. But volume is getting lower and lower and lower and lower and lower. Okay, you like that little effect I did there? Little whisper?
Yeah.
Volume is getting lower and lower and lower, while share price is getting higher and higher and higher. Well, why is that? Well, that's because Apple's not really being traded like it was. people are buying it and they're hoarding up all the shares and they're maintaining it in inventory. Now, the trans juxtaposition of that, is that even a word, by the way? Trans juxtaposition?
No, just eliminate the trans.
No, I prefer trans juxtaposition.
You can say juxtaposed to that. No, you can use it as a verb.
I know, you're silently correcting my grammar. The trans juxtapositionification of that, oh, I can keep going, is oil. So I'm looking at a chart of the open interest of crude oil future contracts. Now, this is the crude oil futures contracts and large energy speculators. According to the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, CFTC, has a humongous increase in the open interest of these crude oil futures contracts. So while stock prices are going up and up and up and volume is going down and down and down, crude oil has price going up and open interest going up as well. So the big money is jumping into the water with both feet in oil. Whereas in the markets, the big money is either already in or already out in stocks. And that, I think, should give oil investors a cause for celebration, because I think that it means that we're going to continue price moving higher, and I think that it gives us a better chance for it to keep going up.
And I think that that's a really good point. And it's also supported by the fact that OPEC doesn't want to be seen as manipulating the price of oil. Well,
right.
If they don't want to be seen as manipulating the price, the only other thing that they can manipulate is inventory, right? And they're right. Looking at, if you look at a chart of the daily the number of barrels that OPEC says that, the world needs to hold in reserve. That the world's using. That graph is kind of useless. I haven't found anywhere that shows that where that oil is actually being used to tell if that graph is actually accurate, in terms of how much the world actually needs. They have a graph of how much oil they think the world is going to buy. But it's not the same as the graph of the amount of oil that the world actually needs to use on a daily basis.
Right.
Hence the inability to accurately predict a level of inventory that will need to be used.
It's like that article. Does that make sense? It's like that article we saw one time where they said fuel is expected to heating oil is expected to be used more in February.
Right.
Well, no. Duh, yeah. Sherlock.
Yeah.
You're right. The speculation of what is going to be used is harder and harder. And as we get to lower and lower fuel prices, that actually increases the draw on inventories. See, the fact that the crude oil prices are going up, but at our gas pump, prices are not going up anywhere near at the same pace.
Yeah, in Houston, they're below. It's 185.
It's lower now.
To 195.
It's lower now than it was when crude was at $50 a barrel. Mm-hmm. So the fact that gas has not gone up as fast as crude oil is tells me one of two things. One, we're eating off of the inventory that was collected when fuel was at $40, $50 a barrel. And so the prices just haven't adjusted. Two, we are doing our darndest to continue to use up all the fuel that we have in order to later justify a higher price rise, right? Because it's all controlled by the simple forces of demand and supply. And if the demand is greater than the supply, prices will indeed rise. If the supply is greater than the demand, prices will indeed fall. Well, at this point, as far as pure oil stocks go, as far as oil goes, you're seeing that the demand is greater than the supply and the price is rising. However, on the gasoline side of things, we've not seen that effect at the pump. Consumers haven't seen it at the pump. And frankly, company stocks have not risen at the same pace. So, for example, Chevron is trading at 131.19. Well, Chevron trading at 131.19, that's actually down from where it was last week at 133.83. So as the stock market continued to march higher and higher and higher, Chevron really went nowhere. Same thing, and I will tell you, as somebody who expected Chevron to break out, it has not done that breakout which was expected. Same thing with ExxonMobil. ExxonMobil's done a bit better. It's up around $89 a share, but it's not had the same meteoric rise up that oil has in the last few weeks. Oil has gone significantly higher than either ExxonMobil or Chevron. When we look at the performance of the individual stocks that are, you know, driven by the price of oil.
Well, and if we look at Trump's speech at Davos as well, you know, he was pretty adamant, you know, talking about how the developed nations of the world and the businesses that are influential as well need to recognize that the people who helped make them that wealthy need to be raised up as well.
Sure.
You know, and so what does that have to do with oil? Well, it has a lot to do with oil because he was talking about the trade between nations, right? And working together as, you know, developed nations and trade. So and we're talking about OPEC inventory and trading. And so what do you think that Trump has, you know, Trump's monetary policies and economic policies have to do with the price of oil, you know, if anything,
well,
when it comes to trade?
Yeah, and I think what it does
And lifting regulations, of course, as well,
sure,
is a huge one on the United
sure.
States.
The more things that we get out of the way to free up trade, the easier it is going to be. And then also what you have is OPEC saying, you know what, we're just going to go back to producing. We're not going to stem production. We're going to go back to producing and fair and open trade. And I think the other side is that, you know, it's been said and it's come to pass that the current administration is open to drilling in places that we've never drilled in the past. And by adding more drilling sites, by adding more of these things, it's going to continue to increase the amount of supply that is available, but it's not happened yet. And until it does, that's when we'll see oil continue to rise, especially as the dollar continues to drop in value.
Okay.
So, all right. Well, I think that's all the time we have for today. I hope everybody enjoyed the show. If you've got any questions, feel free to send us an email, IIEfinancial.com. Thanks so much, Annie. Appreciate you being here. See you all real soon.
IIE Financial is an investment advisor representative with Symphony Financial, a registered investment advisor. Charles Fulkerson is an investment advisor representative with IIE Financial and Symphony Financial, LTD Co. Annie Fulkerson is not registered nor affiliated with Symphony Financial. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Symphony Financial. The topics discussed and opinions given are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. IIE Financial does not offer legal or tax advice. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their financial needs with the appropriate professional regarding your individual circumstance.